Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. The Baseball America podcast nook is looking a little bit messy today, but it's only because there's been a flurry of activity at Baseball America. Opening day rosters, opening day, crazy new approach to our minor league blog, which has been, I think, very successful. And, of course, the usual draft and college and amateur craziness. It's a great time to be a Baseball American. So we're here to talk with you about it, obviously, here at the Baseball America podcast. We missed you last week because of all that activity, so you get your podcast a little earlier this week, JJ. But
Maybe we'll come back and do another. We're not promising anything, but you never know.
I think there's a very good chance of a draft podcast coming in very soon, because I know that Connor Glassy has been spearheading our work toward our midseason top 60 draft prospect, a midseason update.
A very difficult top 60 to do, just to give you a sneak peek, just because it's been a – it's not a year where everything's settling out. Everything's unsettling.
There's no doubt. So that probably needs its own podcast.
But we will have its own podcast.
We're here to talk about we're not here to talk about the past. Actually, no, we are. We're going to talk about the last week or so, the first week of the minor league season, JJ. And it was neat just to have – I thought the major league – opening day kind of being staggered was almost a little too much.
I think it was a lot too much.
I like baseball, so yeah. I think the Japan stuff was too much personally. I don't mind 2 days. I don't mind a Wednesday night and then a Thursday.
It's actually, and let's be honest, it's 3 days because it's
it's March
Wednesday
26.
Night. No, I'm taking even if you take the Japan, I'm saying the Japan
four.
Part was too much.
Yeah.
But take that out of it. It's Wednesday, it's Thursday, and then it's Friday because there's a lot of teams that opened up on Friday.
Right, and the thing that bothered me, the only part of it that bothered me was that kind of obscured minor league opening day, which I was
it was strange to have them open on the same day.
I thought it was odd. I thought it was a little bit odd to have them open at the same time. I almost wish the minor leagues had started on Tuesday night before the major leagues. We'd get geeked for it.
Yeah.
I know the national media would not. But we would get goosed for minor league opening day being the day before.
That'll ever happen, though, because it's one of those trickle-down things. Like, those last decisions, those last roster decisions you're making.
Yeah, you got to imagine that low Class A could open on Tuesday.
Oh, I'm not saying they couldn't.
You know,
I'm saying, but I don't think they'll ever let the minor leagues open before the major leagues.
That's just another part of minor league slavery to the major leagues that Bill James wants ended. I don't. I'm for the slavery of the minor leagues. I like the current development system. I think there are ways it could be made more efficient.
We just rattled off 10 of those.
We did. We could talk about that in this podcast. But let's focus more on the fact that what opening night really gave us, JJ, were a lot of anticipated debuts and a lot of players in, you know, getting a teenage Bryce Harper in AAA. And it really didn't disappoint. A lot of good prospects had great opening days and opening weekends.
I think the thing we saw, which is not that surprising to us, was just another reminder of that 2011 draft class. Really good draft class. If you say who's going to be the nucleus of the next wave of prospects, there's going to be a whole lot of 2011 draftees among that group.
Yeah, and the fun part is that a lot of these guys got challenged. You know, even the high school guys, I think it's challenging. We had some questions about Dylan Bundy, like, shouldn't he be in high Class A? This guy was just in high school last year.
Sending him to low A at the start of the year.
Ball was pretty good.
Well, I was going to say this. If you didn't send Dylan Bundy, I would say that you were holding him back too much. If you said, we need to hold him back and extend him.
Sure.
Especially,
he's a different cat.
But that being said, I don't see how there can be any shock that he's sent to low A, not high A. High A is not going anywhere. Send him to low A. Let him dominate that for however long. I mean, do remember, Bryce Harper. They didn't send him. I mean, it's something, and he had a year of JUCO ball. It's one of those things where give him, if he has five starts where he dominates five starts and you say, okay, we're going to move you up to high A, you've lost nothing from that.
Right. I mean, I just thinking today in the major leagues as we're recording this was Matt Moore's first start of 2012. I know Matt Moore didn't get a major league contract and wasn't right out of the chute. He was an eighth-round pick versus Dylan Bundy. You know, some people think he was the best player in last year's draft class, and he might turn out to be. But Matt Moore spent his first year in extended spring training and then started in rookie ball. And the next year he was in rookie ball, I mean, short season
and,
ball.
No, and the Rays.
I think the Rays approach, and they did the same thing with Jeremy Hellickson, their high school pick. Again, not as physical as Dylan Bundy, different kind of guy.
Not as developed at that point either.
And
in both cases, we should explain.
He was very polished. He was a big
time
guy.
I'm not saying he was not polished.
He was potentially a first round pick coming into his high school senior season. He had a back injury. That's why he fell to the fourth round. So he was very highly regarded. The previous summer, he was in the small group of top high school pitchers in the
country.
Again,
I'm not saying he wasn't highly regarded. Bundy, he was not being given, but he was not being given, this guy's a college pitcher in a high school body.
No, the difference was he wasn't as physical. But he was a college pitcher in terms of his polish, big changeup, strike thrower. That was always Jeremy Hellick's reputation. So that's why I picked him. He was a polished pitcher out of high school who was thought to be a guy you could accelerate. And even with him, the Rays took it slow. And I think the Rays know what they're doing. That's why I'm going into the Bundy thing. I think it would have been acceptable to send Dylan Bundy to extend his spring training. I think it would have not been acceptable, frankly, to push him all the way up to high Class A. There's not a huge difference between low A and high A. I don't think it's too aggressive. But I think characterizing it as aggressive is fair, even as much hype as Dylan Bundy has, because I think it's hard for high school pitchers to pitch more than 100 innings in pro ball in their first year. It's the workload issue.
Okay.
So again,
I'll give you that.
I think the Rays. Oh, thank you. But I think the Rays. The bigger issue is the Rays have given us a very good blueprint of how to develop high school pitchers, and they're consistent with it. They've done it with Latin guys. They've done it with draft guys, right-handers, left-handers, power guys, polished guys. It works. And I also think the Blue Jays did it before, and they did it. Dustin McGowan, but he got hurt. But I don't think that's why he got hurt. He was hurt when he was drafted. Brandon League has been a very nice closer for them. They did it with a lot of high school pitchers as well. And I think they had success with it in the Halliday, Chris Carpenter, all those kind of guys. So there's two organizations I know of that I've covered and worked on where they've taken that patient approach, first year 80 innings or so for those pitchers right out of high school. That's what I would do. And I think it is aggressive to go more than that, and I think you have a couple of very concrete examples that work. So I think it was very aggressive. I shouldn't say very aggressive. I think it was aggressive. So I'm looking at it completely differently, that people think they could have pushed him more. I think it's very aggressive to put him in full season.
Well, and I guess I don't disagree with you on the innings. I think that you could put, and you're right, there's not a really big difference
in talent level between the short season, say the New York Penn League where Aberdeen is, and the South Atlantic League.
I'll agree with you on the innings, and my point is I also don't think, like, I think that if you put Dylan Bundy in high A, I don't think, like, Dylan Bundy pitching in double A at some point this year is probably a little aggressive from the standpoint of that demarcation line of double A, you could get him in a situation
where he's not, right.
Whereas high A, though, if you told me, do you think that Dylan Bundy could go to high A and have success? Yes.
I do.
But at the same time, yeah, I agree with you, and I know your philosophy on this somewhat. You would rather see a guy held back and extended. If you're going to say 80 innings, you would rather that 80 innings be in, you know, in a half season of starts than 80 innings in a full season where you're going out for three innings at a time.
I called up Jameson Taillon, the 23 starts, 92 and two-thirds innings, where you're pulling the reins on him the whole time. I'm not a fan of that approach. I want a guy to be ready to go, and then from that first start, and just go full bore and pitch a season the way he's always pitched. Not this, not being trained to be done after five innings.
The one thing that was a little surprising, like Gerrit Cole yesterday.
Whose track record is better for developing pitchers, the Pirates or the Rays? It's not even close.
But
not even close.
Gerrit Cole didn't go five innings last night, which was interesting to me from the standpoint of, even if you say Jameson Taillon, Gerrit Cole is a whole different animal.
They had Gerrit Cole pitch in the fall league last year. I mean, so he was throwing innings that sort of count against good competition in October and November. I mean, I saw him in November, I think. Isn't that when the Rising Stars game is? Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, put it this way, I'm just not a real huge fan of I don't think the Pirates, well, we'll see what the Pirates approach works. The proof will be in Jameson Taillon and Gerrit Cole.
Right,
I think I said last year when they drafted him, I'm not high on their development approach, and I don't have as much confidence in Gerrit Cole being a Pirate as I would in Gerrit Cole being something else. So, but you know, a couple of years ago, I didn't have great faith in the Royals pitching, and then some of their guys took a step forward. We'll see if they keep taking a step forward.
I mean, it's just that that judgment
did,
as far as pitching.
They did change pitching coordinators. Right. There's no more Bill Fisher.
The judgment we'll have to see is if, I mean, because the hitters are there. The pitchers have not fully, you know, the pitching wave has not arrived yet.
No,
so
it's still kind of up in the air. I'm more encouraged because they brought in Rick Knapp. But I thought Bundy, and the thing is he threw three innings. So we'll see what kind of pitch count they have. And, you know, Dan Duquette's in charge in Baltimore. That's not driving confidence up. In anyone's estimation, basically, it almost feels like people think that Dylan Bundy is almost too good to screw up. So maybe we'll see. That's going to be put to the test.
I've had our scouts say, you know, if they screw this one up, they're really screwing it up. Because this guy, if you don't do anything,
yeah,
you almost have to actively screw him up. Besides, you know, hey, guys can get hurt. We always know that.
He really
but
is too good.
If you say 2 years from now this guy's not throwing strikes and his stuff is backed off, well then don't point the finger at Dylan Bundy necessarily.
We actually have a Twitter question about that from Jose Sempertegui. I hope I pronounced Jose's last name. Sempertegui, I think, is probably how you do the last name. But I'm sorry, Jose, if I butchered your name. But it's a good question. Who's close for the majors, G. Cole or Dylan Bundy? Will Bauer get a chance before Skaggs? I do think Bauer actually probably will get a chance before Skaggs, just from a 40-man roster standpoint.
That helps. That makes a big
difference. That's the only reason I would say he'd get a chance first. I like both those guys a ton.
If one's on and one's not, you look at it and go, okay, well, which one do we not have to make a move?
Yeah, I mean, Skaggs, there's so much to like about Tyler Skaggs.
There's so much to like about both of those. There's so much to like about that rotation.
Right, and the future of that franchise. I mean, you really have to be encouraged.
They're in a great situation. We talked about this in our meeting room when we were talking. Maybe it was our top 20 rookie meetings or one of those. And we talked about how, you know what, one of the things that really stands out for the Diamondbacks is they had a couple of guys who had pitchers who had really good seasons last year who you really have to have a little bit of healthy skepticism of, can this guy do this again as a starter? And you want to see it. The Josh Cole mentors in all the world.
Right.
And you want to see, can they do it again? Well, you have to give them that chance. You do not take a guy like that out of the rotation after the season they had. But they also have a group of guys who really could use a little bit more seasoning.
No doubt.
So what you have now is that you let those guys, they've got essentially, as I see it, a half season to kind of prove last year wasn't a fluke. Or
right.
if it's looking flukish, you then are picking to choose between, okay, is it going to be Skaggs? Is it going to be Bauer? Patrick Corbin sitting here, you know,
right.
kind of on the sidelines
right.
ready. You know, you have multiple options to fill in those holes without having to make a move elsewhere. If you have a guy go down, you have multiple options to fill those holes.
I know he's not in this caliber, but you have a guy like Barry Enright who's had some major league success, kind of parked at AAA and, you know, again, has some major league track record. You have lower level guys like Andrew Chafin, and then looming behind them all, you might have the best arm out of all these guys on Archie Bradley. So, yeah, I mean, that's the way to have pitching, is to have it at the major league level, which they do through a couple of shrewd trades. I mean, in their own, their own development at the major league level of getting the most out of Ian Kennedy and the most out of Daniel Hudson. Thank you, Kenny Williams, for handing Daniel Hudson over to the Diamondbacks. And then they have it at Double A and they have it at lower levels. And there's just no reason not to be optimistic about their future pitching. The other part of the question, close to the majors, Cole or Bundy? I really think it's Cole. He has all the advantages that Bundy has as far as his physicality and his polish are things that Cole has. Cole has more experience.
Oh, the big thing is one, when you're talking about the difference between a teenager and a guy who's on the other side of 20, there's a difference there because almost any organization is going to treat the teenager
right differently.
Differently. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing. Even if you say that the two of them are equally ready, Gerrit Cole is much more ready to go through the grind of 30 plus starts in the big league than Dylan Bundy, because he's gone through, it's not the same grind, but he's gone through multiple years of the college, you know, grind, which
Absolutely. It's
not as much of a grind, but it's still
more
a grind.
More of a grind than the Oklahoma high school grind.
Right. It's not something where you're talking about going out there and just blowing guys away in a 7-inning game and
right.
then being done for, you know,
right.
for a week.
Yeah, it is different. And, so I definitely think that Cole is closer to the majors. I think Bundy has a higher ceiling, as high as Cole's ceiling is, but those are two different questions. Got a couple other Twitter questions while we're taking the Twitter. I'll take this one from Robert Zukowski, which is higher in my timeline. Because it talks about a player who's off to a strong start. Tyler Collins has looked good in a very small sample. What does BA think of him? Is he a fast mover? And, that's actually a guy, that's an interesting one. because I think last year the Tigers took several college hitters, like the guy from Vanderbilt there in Westlake.
709 right now or something. It's insane. It's one of those numbers like it's not hitting 700. 700's nice.
Right.
709 is a lot better because you have to have a lot more at-bats to get to 709.
Yeah, 706.
706.
Yeah. He's 12 for 17 with the three extra base hits to start the year. What I like about this is, first of all, it's also funny on our stats. His Australia Winter League is split between 2011 and 2012. There's a little bugginess in there. It's like, wait a minute, he played at Sydney 2 years? But first of all, he's jumped to high class A Lakeland. I think that makes sense. Second of all, if you dig into Tyler Collins, while his track record in pro ball is short, his track record of hitting is very long. He was the dominant player in junior college, and then he dominated last summer in the Texas Collegiate League. He was the number one prospect there. Then he dominated after he signed in short season Connecticut. And then he hit again in winter ball in Australia. So he's a little bit older. He'll be 22 this year. So I think it makes sense to move him quickly. I do think he has a chance to be for real. I don't know if he's going to be an everyday regular because you wonder about the power. He is listed at 5'11", 205. It just doesn't seem like he's going to be a 25 home run guy that you like to see on the corners. But, JJ, he does sound like a guy who's going to be a high average, a lot of doubles, 15 to 20 home run guy. I think he's going to be a regular. I don't know if he's a second division regular or a first division. I think it's a little early to tell there. But Tyler Collins is definitely one of my favorite Tigers prospects.
I just love the fact that, you know, basically you get a Twitter question like that. And I can attest for that John did this without – there was no notes or anything.
Yeah, I have screen in front of me to see he's 12 for 17.
Okay, but, you know, 12 for 17. But beyond that, like, okay, Texas Collegiate League, yeah, he dominated that last year.
Yeah.
I would not have been able to just cite his Texas Collegiate League dominance, you know,
well,
off the top of my head. But
that was that league – this is an aside, but that league probably had the biggest gap between number one prospect and number 10 prospect in the history of Baseball America top 10. I'm not going to call out the name of the player. Someone else could go look him up. But just suffice it to say, the intern turned in that top 10, and it needed some work. And I went to do some work on that list. And there was a player who was ranked higher than he is now, and I was doing research on him, and I thought, okay, this guy's too high. And then I called a coach in the league, and he was like, wait a minute, he's listed as a prospect? But we didn't have a ton more information. So that league, there are prospects in that league. I'm sure we missed somebody in the TCL last summer. We did not miss Tyler Collins. So at least it was that obvious, is my point. He was so far away the number one prospect in that league that even our guy did not miss him, because our intern was the end of the summer, and he didn't miss Tyler Collins. He may have missed somebody else, but he didn't miss Tyler Collins. That's why he sticks out in my head.
Okay.
Almost a little too much sausage-making information there. That's the Baseball America podcast with John and JJ. Where do you want to go next?
I don't know. How do you follow that up?
I'm rambling.
Well, actually, you know what? We have a question that ties into what we were just talking about. I think we've already almost answered this in some ways, but Chris Stevens asked on Twitter, what do you think of the Jays babying the Lansing pitchers to only 3 innings per outing now?
Yeah, I mean, I just am not a fan of that approach. I like the idea. I understand you got to have an innings count on them, but I'm not a fan of the 3 innings at a time. Even from a development standpoint, I think you're putting in muscle memory there. That 3 innings is what's expected of your arm, and 3 innings is what's expected of your body. And I don't see why you'd want to enforce that, why you want to reinforce that constantly. And for me, if you have too many prospects, could you not take 4 of those guys? I don't know how many pitchers do they have there. Could you not take a group of those guys and make that's your rotation basically from April to July? When they're out of innings, they're done with their innings. And then you have another group that goes from June to the end of the year, if that's what you have to do, if you have too many prospects. But I'm really not a fan of reinforcing over and over that 3, 4, or 5 innings or 60, 70, 80 pitches, that's reinforced to your body that that's the end of your day. Because that's not what's expected at the major leagues. And I think if you're building that into somebody 1 year, it's hard to get them out of that habit. They're very young.
Well, the interesting thing with that is that it's counter to what you talk about when you go on further on, in that later on you're making judgments on guys. You know, okay, you may have a hard cap at the top, but you're going, you know what? You also generally entrust your pitching coach with the ability to say, you know what?
Right.
Okay, you're not at 95. You could go after this, but you really labored that last inning. we're pulling you out now.
It is.
Where instead what you're saying is no, we're not, there's no judgment to this. You're not talking about these guys that you're generally talking about where you say, this guy's not ready to go another inning. What you're saying is artificially, no, it doesn't matter, you're just, sit down.
Yeah, you're basically also, how are you supposed to learn how to, it's a showcase approach to development, if you ask me. How are you going to teach a pitch? How can you work on deepening your repertoire in three innings? How can you learn
because
to
you're
command
not going
your fastball? You're not going through a lineup. I mean, I know that every pitch is called. How do you learn to get guys out? How do you learn to make a pitch? How do you learn to compete when you know you've got 45 pitches? How do you really learn to compete in that environment? How are you not just going to go out there mentally? I think you're setting up a giant hurdle for pitchers.
Rear back and throw, if
that's
it. Because if I'm going three innings,
that's it.
There is no reason for me to hold stuff back.
You can tell a guy all you want to tell him, but how are you going to?
And beyond that, also,
it's human nature.
If I'm going three innings, I'm not saving my breaking ball in the back pocket until the second time through.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because that's something down the road you want to develop, is that ability. I can get through this lineup one time, fastball, changeup, or fastball, breaking ball, and then I'm going to have it for the next time through. I'm going to have something to give them a little something else to worry about.
Just from another standpoint, how about teaching your catchers how to call their own game? You want to teach a catcher.
And this is not a Blue Jays. This is just an overall.
Yeah. You're teaching a catcher how to call, okay, I'm counting the number of changeups that this pitcher is supposed to throw, so I got to make sure I get all my changeups in for this guy. I mean, I just don't see how that's conducive to teaching players how to get better. I understand how it's conducive to maybe you think you're keeping them healthy. I don't buy it. I know that there's a lot of organizations out there. I know a lot of research has gone into that, too. I've talked to enough people who are on the other side of that debate, who are on the other side of that fence, and think that the way that you learn to pitch is that you pitch. And like you just said, you teach your coaches to evaluate and to watch pitchers so you know when they're tired and you know when they're not tired. And that's, and I think pitchers
and
have
you
to learn
what?
To
and
compete,
if you wanna,
have to learn to get themselves out of jams, have to learn to pitch a little bit when they're tired, JJ. I'd rather them learn that at higher levels than at lower levels.
Right.
But I don't want them learning that the first time in the major leagues.
Right. I understand the holding off on the pitching, learning to pitch tired to a little later, because there is a pretty strong body of evidence that it is easier to get hurt as a pitcher, as a young pitcher, than it is when you're a little older.
Sure.
That makes sense.
But I don't
so
that
being the case,
that in the big league.
Right, but it's not something where you want to say, yeah, as a 24-year-old when you hit the big leagues, okay, now for the first time you're going to have to learn how to get guys out when you're tired. Or
I mean,
when you have
just,
to,
but just the Nicolino, Noah Syndergaard, three innings at a time, and they've got some other, obviously Aaron Sanchez, the guy who they piggybacked. It looks like it's basically a piggyback situation. And you know, that's been tried, and that has not worked. You know, the Reds did the piggybacks when O'Brien was their general manager. The Rangers did the piggybacking stuff with Grady Fuson. And the guys that Grady Fuson developed were guys who were college guys who sped through the system, like Tim Hudson, Mark Mulder, and Barry Zito, guys who were not babied, guys who were not piggybacked. So,
by the way, while you're doing that, it reminds me of a digression now to go on, which is that you had called up our Baseball America stat pages, which
that's an effective digression.
If you have not checked them out this year, please do.
The first thing you should do is just go on the Baseball America page, go to Stats and Scores Home. That's the first place to go. Is that not the start page?
Yeah, that's the start page. And
or I suppose on the home page, underneath the player finder, we have added the Stats Central.
Right.
And first, I guess, I'm digressing. Before that, our Player Finder, which is a popular feature and has been a great Player Finder for a long time. You can enter the whole name. You don't just search by last name. It's a very useful Player
Finder.
And
it's quick. You type it in.
It's quick.
It calls it up quick.
But now the Player Finder is crazy.
In a good way.
In a really
it's
good
not just
way.
Slightly unhinged, a little unbalanced.
Like me. It's crazy in a good way. It's crazy like a fox, JJ. In that it has a lot of – it gives you a hint of the depth of coverage for us. Even for a young player like Justin Nicolino, draft history, organization rankings, league top prospect rankings, organization best tools rankings, all that stuff is in there. We've been building these databases for years, and we're finally accumulated all the information, organized the information, and now we're able to present some of that depth of coverage.
Let me give you an example on this. You see a guy in AAA has a big night the night before, okay? Go put him in Player Finder. If nothing shows up, if you put him in Player Finder and under the rankings and ratings and all that, nothing shows up in that port, you know this is a guy, okay, he had a big night last night, never has been a big prospect.
Right.
That doesn't mean he's not going to make it, but never been a big prospect. You know, if you're talking about a guy who's had some track record and he does not show up in that.
Here's a great example. Here's Russ Kanzler. Russ Kanzler, last year's AAA International League MVP, but in the offseason, you know, leaves the Rays and winds up with the Indians. I think it was a trade. It was a cash considerations trade. He's got draft history and no other ranking.
That right there tells you, and sorry, Russ, but it tells you, you know right there, it's a great way of being able to say, okay, wait, that guy who's leading the league and whatever, does that guy, is he a prospect or is he more of an org guy? Well,
more of an org
guy. If you've got a guy who's got 5-6 years in the minors and he's not popping up there somewhere, probably more of an org guy.
Meanwhile, his former teammate, Chris Archer, who was in Durham, off to a good start, struck out 8 in 6 innings in his first start here in AAA Durham. You've got draft history, organization rankings between the two organizations.
I was going to say, Cubs number 15 prospect after 09, number 1 prospect after 10, and the Rays number 3 prospect after 11. He was the number 27 prospect in the top 100 after 10. There was the number 89 prospect after 11. We have him. He was
four league top 10.
Four
prospects.
League top 10s. He had a best slider, best fastball, best slider in three. Which the best tools are awesome because
that's
it's
awesome.
Okay, so now we know what it is. That little thing right there, you know, we love about baseball. One of the things you love about stats is a lot of times you can picture guys a little bit from the stats.
You can get a little thumbnail sketch.
You're adding a little bit more there. It's like, oh, best fastball, best slider. Okay, so he's a power guy.
That thumbnail went to a one-column photo, all of a sudden, to use a layout term.
Yeah.
So
maybe a two-column.
It might be two-column. We've got a lot of information there. And, I think we need to give credit where credit is due. Tim Collins. And Brent Lewis is our main IT guy.
Let me clear. It's not the Royals reliever. Tim Collins. We have our own Tim Collins.
And this guy, like the Royals reliever, is from the Northeast and little.
Yes.
Otherwise, there are no similarities. I'm not sure.
They're both talented.
I guess Brent Lewis would be our J.P. Ricciardi to his Tim Collins. He was our talent scout who found this Tim Collins. But on it.
Beyond that, so you got the player finder. You've got now, if you go to our Stat Central page, you can basically, with one click, you can be looking at stats. I guess technically two clicks is once you expand the you can be looking at stats for any team in the minors, two clicks. And if you want, the part to me that I love, two big things for me. If you go to any organization, at the top of the Stats Central page, we have affiliations. You click on any organization.
Let's go, Mets.
And you click search. Takes you to that team. Now, it's going to give you a list so you can look at rosters, schedule, stats for any team in that, or you know, for any affiliate of that team.
Right.
More than that, though, also at the top of it has organization hitters and organization pitchers. That's going to give you the entire organization sortable by whatever you want to sort it by.
Yes.
And also from that, you can go out of that, though. It doesn't have to just be by organization. You can do it by AA. You can do it by, you know, league. You know, you can do it by league, you can do it by classification, you can do it by position. You can say, what's the best hitting shortstop in the minors right now? By OPS, it'll tell you that. Which outfielder has the most home runs in the minors right now? It'll tell you that. The depth of ability to kind of dive in there and sort through it and all is something we've not had. Also, on the player finder.
It is cool. I'm looking for that shortstop answer to see who leads all shortstops in all of baseball and ops. I don't think it's Vince Ablitz. But Vance Ablitz was a great Division II player. The answer is Nick Green.
Although it's only one game, if you're going to say with a 10-inning cutout, 10 at-bat cutout,
it's Brad Miller. Which makes sense because he's playing a high desert. He already has 4 home runs.
Brad Miller's going to have a big year this
year. Probably as many home runs as he hit all of last year at Clemson.
But so you look at that, there's the ability to just really dive into that.
That's awesome.
And kind of do that in whatever way you want to sort it. Also on the Player Finder page, we've got game logs now. I'll give you an example for me. I'm doing Bapper today. Levi Michael
That's
played
the
second.
Baseball America Prospect Report.
Baseball America Prospect Report. Another thing, plug here. If you aren't getting that every day, sign up. It's a free email. You don't have to be a subscriber.
Tell me where the game logs are.
Type in Levi Michael. So like I look at Levi.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by individual player.
So
yes.
I look at Levi
yes.
Michael
gotcha.
Today, and he's playing second base. And it made me think. I was out of town this weekend, you know, made a trip for Easter, so I have a couple days behind on the box. I was like, so has Levi Michael played second this year predominantly, or has he been predominantly playing shortstop?
That was first.
So you go to the game log, and it tells you what position he played in each game. And he played short, he played short, he played short, he played second. Okay, That gives me that answer.
And you can click on that box score. You can click on that.
I can click on that box score. Another thing I'm looking at Bapper today. Brian Morris throws one-third of an inning. Pirates prospect. Morris throws one-third of an inning. First question, obviously, I have is okay, is that what he's doing or was he hurt?
Right.
So I go to Brian Morris. Not that you could not have done this before, but it would have been multiple steps. I just player finder Brian Morris, go to his game log, click on the box score from it. Oh, he came in and got the last out of the seventh.
There you go.
Okay, and that was what he did. So you know that. It's like, which kind of says something. He's actually made two appearances, and he has one and a third innings this year.
So he's in the pen for good.
He's in the pen for good, and he's not just in the pen. It's not really like priority innings in the pen right now for Brian Morris.
But what you also see is that Danny Santana, who it was signed, it was a priority international signee for the Twins. He's playing second most of the time, but he's going to play some shortstop. But that tells you, I think the Twins are going to play both those guys at second and short, and we can follow up on that with a phone call. So that's just, again, that thumbnail went to a two-column photo, like you said.
And so that's what I'm saying. If you
under old BA, it might have been like a 19th pike of photo.
No, I was going to say, under old BA, it was kind of like an etching.
That's right. You know, that's right. It was an etching.
So
it was a drawing of Kevin McReynolds.
So this will continue to get better as the season goes along. We got some other things we want to keep adding that are going to even add to it. But if you haven't checked it out, we do think that our stats package is significantly better now than it was if you were used to it in the past.
We don't think so. We know it is better. It's significantly better.
I know from personal use it's significantly better.
How significant? You be the judge and give us the feedback. We'd love to hear your feedback. Obviously, there are millions of ways you can get in touch with us. You can call, you can email, you can hit us up on the Twitter. JJ, with lots of Twitter questions. One of them actually goes into a topic we wanted to riff on. By Roger Munter, he asks, are we starting to think J.J. Hardy's three-year extension is too long a bridge to Machado time in Baltimore? First of all, I'm glad the Orioles fans are excited about Manny Machado. He's off to a great start. I mean, I think we've all liked his bat.
Second of all, I'll say this. I don't think so from the standpoint of that J.J. Hardy and Manny Machado can coexist.
I think that's exactly the way to put it. They can coexist. One of them can move to third. Probably the older guy is your best-case scenario, but, hey, if Machado needs to, that's fine. It looks like all indications are
he's going to hit like
a third baseman. That's where I'm
right.
going. He has the power to profile wherever you want to stick him.
Right. And so, to me, if you're the Orioles, I'll put it this way. There are many things to worry about if you're an Orioles fan.
That's right. That's not
whether J.J. Hardy is going to block Manny Machado is not one of them, because I cannot envision a scenario where the Orioles say, you know what? Manny Machado cannot help this team right now.
Go back to Norfolk.
Yeah. We need another 2 years. That's not going to happen. This is not a guy who's going to be blocked by J.J. Hardy's extension.
They want him getting to the big leagues. They want him in that cartoonish Oriole hat as soon as possible.
And the funny thing about that is, and I'm a giant Jonathan Scope fan also, this doesn't even block Jonathan Scope, because you look at it, reality is that you're going to need long-term, you need a third baseman, a second baseman, and a shortstop. Long-term, J.J. Hardy can fill one of those spots.
Yeah.
That gives you two others that I don't think you have necessarily a long-term answer there.
I agree, and it makes a lot of sense. It's a good problem to have. It makes a lot of sense that those two players can coexist. I like the way that you put that. I think that's a good characterization. The other part of the question that Roger asked was about the extension, the contract extension.
We've had a debate with him in the office about this.
I wanted to pivot a little bit, or if I were talking with my kids, I'd be blocking and bridging. Mm-hmm. So I want to block and bridge a little bit to your other subject about the Reds. You do our Reds top 30s. They're not exactly blocking anybody now that they traded Yonder Alonso. I guess they're blocking Neftali Soto. Neftali Soto may as well just – he's counting down. He's got a giant calendar counting down to six-year free agency.
Unless he's like, oh, I did find that catcher's mitt that I had in that locker. I better pull that out, which I don't think is going to happen. No one from the Reds has told me that Neftali Soto is going back to catching, so don't misunderstand me on
that. Best-case scenario for Soto, could he play third base? Have they already tried that?
I think he's got a better chance to be a catcher than a third baseman, really.
Yeah, so
I mean, I don't think –
they have plenty of third basemen, too.
Yeah, Todd Frazier's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Exactly. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I've been blocked long enough.
Juan Francisco is probably texting him like, hey, man, forget about that. You're not going to play third or first over there. But the Reds lock up Joey Votto for 10 years beyond the 2 years already left
with
on this contract.
An option to go another year after
that. So basically a Todd Helton contract with interest is what they gave him. And that worked out so well for Todd Helton and the Rockies. And then they follow that up with...
today.
Yeah, with Brandon Phillips. So they've committed about $300 million to Joey Votto and Brandon Phillips, who, by the way, looking him up on baseballreference.com, you see that B-Ref has added Twitter handles?
Yes.
I think that's a little much. I don't want that, Twitter handles. That dude BP.
That dude BP.
But that dude DP is now locked up. But $300 million between those two guys. I still think Joey Votto will be buying the dinners when the two of those guys go out because he got a lot more money than Brandon Phillips. JJ, you appear to be concerned for the direction of the Reds with those two contracts. Is that a fair characterization?
No, I think that this – I think in the long term this is bad news if you're a Reds fan.
Okay.
I think – now, clearly, we're talking long term. That being said –
In terms of the fact that it's going to be bad for the Major League team winning, or is it going to drive up your ticket prices? Or how
No.
Bad,
I think for the winning, for the win, okay. And we've had this discussion in the office, because I think that it's fair to say that you see it as more of a good thing for the Reds. The sign that the Reds have kept their star, they haven't had many stars there, they've locked up Joey Votto. And even the Brandon Phillips deal, I think you're a little more receptive to that than I am.
I am more receptive to the Phillips deal in general. The Votto deal is, again, if you're modeling a contract after the Todd Helton contract, that's just a bad thing to do. That said, in the market of what Pujols and Fielder just got this offseason, I understand why the Reds went a little crazy. I still think it's too long. I think 12 years is crazy for anybody. I mean, it's kind of the hockey model. I mean, the Islanders signed their goalie, Rick DiPietro, to a 15-year contract. He was younger and less accomplished than Votto, and the contract is less lucrative. But you're still locked into this such a long-term contract. You don't really – you're married to that player. You know, what if he were to say something along the lines of Ozzie Guillen said?
Doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, you're stuck. And I'll say that Joey Votto –
he's
unlikely.
He's no Ozzie Guillen.
He's no Ozzie Guillen. But that being said,
I don't know who the equivalent would be in Cincinnati. it would be someone left. It would be someone almost as liberal as.
Well, I was going to say, it'd be Mark Furman, the WLW talk show host.
Yeah, that's it.
Nice Cincinnati
pull.
Reference.
Good pull, absolutely. But yeah, it doesn't make sense to me to sign anyone for 12 years. But I think, I'm just not as concerned about the money. I think the money's out there. When Instagram's getting $1 billion, JJ, or the Dodgers are getting 2.15,
but my thing is just
the
that,
money's there.
But
the length of the contract is what bothers me more.
Again, I'm not a Reds fan. But if I was a Reds fan, to me, yeah, the money, I do not care as a fan. You know, I've never understood this whole, these players are overpaid thing.
Right.
The market bears what the market bears. The market for an all-star / MVP first baseman these days is somewhere on the north side of $20 million.
Correct.
So, you know, that's not – I don't think you could anyway argue that the average of the deal that Joey Votto is way overpaid for this. You look at his age, he's younger than Pujols. He's not as good as Albert Pujols. Let's
right.
make that clear.
Right.
But
actually,
he's the next – but
right
he's now
–
I'll say this.
He's I think he's more on the same level as Pujols. He won't have a peak like Albert Pujols. I don't think he's going to be – the best first baseman of all time, which I think Albert Pujols is now.
I think so,
but,
too.
But I don't think...
He's the best off first baseman in the National League, and I don't think there's a debate on that now.
I agree. Yeah, I completely agree.
I mean, the debates have all left the building. They're
That's
on
right.
the AL now.
That's right.
But that being said, to me, if you are a small or mid-market team, like, to me, the Angels sign Albert Pujols to an insane deal, and the likelihood that Albert Pujols is going to be a productive player year after year in the final years of those deals is pretty slim. Because if you just look at 38, 39, 40-year-olds, even if you have a good year here and a good year there, it's mixed in as he had a neck injury that year or a back
right.
injury and he missed 100 games or whatever. You age. Everyone ages. We both know that.
Right. Right.
But it's not right. that. It's the part that But the Angels can do that. The Angels have demonstrated. They can have Vernon Wells, and then, you know, they can eat Vernon Wells' contract, essentially say, okay, this guy may not be productive for us.
Right.
And then they can still go out and get an Albert Pujols. My question, if I was a Reds fan, is, okay, for one, do these deals mean that these are the guys that we have wrapped up, and then when the Cuetos, when the Jay Bruces,
the Matt Latos,
when they hit free agency, we're not going to be able to afford them because there's only so many $20 million deals that a Cincinnati Reds type payroll can handle. If that's the question, to me, Brandon Phillips has been a very good player for them. But if you said, would I rather have the next 7 years of Jay Bruce or the next 6 years of Brandon Phillips. I'd rather have the Jay Bruce years.
Well, they already do have Jay Bruce locked up through 2016.
I guess
so
that's true, yeah.
2016, they've got Phillips, Bruce, and Votto. They've got that core.
They've got the core.
They've got some young, cheap players to fill in around them with guys like Frazier, Cozart, Drew Stubbs, some of the other young players in their farm system. You would assume that Billy Hamilton could be a complimentary piece
center
on the
fielder
line.
Or shortstop.
Shortstop or center field. It's not going to be
second base.
Brandon Phillips. Who are some other young position players?
Well, Devin Mesoraco is going to be.
That's the most important one I was missing.
You know, so they have that. But my question, and it's really more of a question. It's not just, I don't want to get too focused on just this, but to me, when you give a guy a 6 year or longer deal in general, you're going to end up saying the best you can hope for this. And this is where we're just debating. We both kind of agree on this, I think, but we look at it different ways. The best to me that you could hope for out of that, if you're giving a 6 year deal to a guy who's reaching free agency, there's a difference. If you give a 6 year extension to a 24-year-old, you may be thinking, our hope is that we're going to get 5 good years out of those 6. And if we lose one to injury, you shrug your shoulders. Okay.
Yeah.
If you're doing that to a 30-year-old, or in Votto's case, if you're giving 12 more years.
Phillips is 30 years old.
Yeah.
This is his age 31 year old, turned 31, I guess, in June.
If you're doing that for that, or if you're doing the next essentially 12 years for Votto, which you're going to take him to 30 through 39.
Right.
You're beyond saying we hope to get. You're not saying with Joey Votto that we hope to get 11 good years out of the next 12. You're unrealistic if you say that. What you're saying is that we're willing to suffer through the end years if there is a significant drop-off.
And you're suffering through them at $25 million per, even with a $7 million buyout in the last year, the age 39 year, which is amazing. That is the amazing part, is the length.
And that's,
and
to
that
me,
backloaded.
To me, I look at that as, okay, I don't think that that's, I think that that ends up being, if you are a club that does not have essentially an unlimited or close to unlimited payroll, that becomes too limiting. Because to me, I understand I'm not a front office executive. I'm not an owner of a team. I may have a too long-term of a viewpoint. Because to me, I don't see it as – I understand the argument of, hey, the goal is always is to win now, and we'll worry about the later. Because if you're in a position to win now, the old adage is that they don't take those championships away.
Right. I guess the only thing I can think of – is if you're the Reds and you're looking at basically Joey Votto 15 years from now, essentially, and you're looking at your franchise 15 years from now, you're almost counting on, and I'm not saying this is, I'm inferring from what they've done. From the previous 15 years, from 1995 to 2010, Major League Baseball revenue for all of MLB grew from $1.4 billion to $7 billion. Mm-hmm. It's like an $8, $9 billion industry right now. It's a big, big deal. When you have the Dodgers being sold for $2.15 billion, I think it's fair to say that whatever you want to say about the sport, the industry is a healthy industry.
Absolutely.
And I think that's beyond question right now.
Absolutely.
But so what you're doing is you're building in a pretty rosy forecast for the entire industry and for your place in that industry, and that 15 years from now, or $25 million, even when the player is not productive anymore, cause I think it's likely that he won't be. That's not as onerous as it seems now.
And the other part
of that calculation, I think, has to be you're expecting that this, in your mind, this is what it took to keep this player, and you really want to win. You got some Mike Ilitch in you. You really want to win, so you're going to overpay these two core players because you feel like in the next 3 to 4 years you're going to win. And you're really going to make a big run at winning.
The best way to put it is that you're counting on that in the next 10 years, payrolls are going to climb at a rate that they have not in the last 10. Because if you look at it, like when you look at when A-Rod signed his 10-year $250.
Right.
Over the next 5 years after that, 5 years later from that, when that contract all of a sudden looked like this massive anchor, 10 years $250 was still...
Right, still a lot of money.
Not just a lot of money; it still put you at the top end of salaries.
Right, you did just have Pujols surprise.
Right, I'm saying just now, but 5 years into that contract.
11 years later, you're right.
5 years into that contract, no one had even hit the $25 million a year for a long term contract mark that A-Rod had started.
It seemed like there was going to be a little mushroom because at that point, basically, it seems like every time we have a CBA agreement, contracts explode.
Right.
You had one in 1997 when after the 90s when they finally signed a CBA in late 95, early 96. You had Junior get $8 million a year, Albert Bell get $8 million a year. Then contracts stayed at that point. Then
right. So what you're
A-Rod.
What you're counting
CBA.
On, if you're the Reds, to do this, to make it make sense, is you're counting on that you're right, that in the next 5 years, 5 years from now, if we look at this, $25 million will be kind of almost a going rate for a good player.
That's basically what I'm arguing, yeah.
Yeah, you're arguing
that
all of a sudden,
that that's what
right, you're arguing yeah. that at that point, $35 million will be for the Albert Pujols type guy.
Yeah, probably.
And $25 million is the useful guy who you sign a three-year, $75 million deal, and this is the guy who's going to, that veteran who's going to take you over the hump.
It seems like it's going that
right,
way.
Right, and I'm not saying it's not.
It seems like it's going that way.
But that's, to me, that's, yeah, you've got to count on that if you're the Reds now, because they've been they've been a $75 to $90 million payroll. The other thing with this,
I don't even think they've been 90. I think they've been in that $80 million range a lot lately. I mean, yeah, the last year, according to the Cots baseball contract, I think a lot of us use $80 million, $80.8 million of their opening day payroll. That's the highest it looks like in Reds history.
And
I mean, the Braves have been in the $80 million payroll range for years. And
my point with that is that you can't. You can't win long term with Joey Votto if you're going to be a sub $100 million. I don't think you can win consistently.
I agree with
a
you.
Sub $100 million. You cannot give him 1/4 of your payroll.
I agree.
Over the next five years.
I don't think they will be. Yeah, I think the payroll's getting ready to go in that $100-$120 million range, and it's kind of going to have to.
But,
and he's under $25 million for the next few years.
Right.
So.
Because they deferred. Yeah.
Right.
They backloaded it, so it'll be a $28-$29 million contract at the end, which will be. A little rough in your.
All I can say is I'm glad it's not my money that they're spending. It's easier for me to talk about. It's not my money.
I did a little research for this coming in. Like, it's not a.
Yes.
It's not a straightforward, okay, this is every guy who signed a 6-year. I just did a simple Google News search, baseball 6-year contracts, and searched from 2002 to 2009. Because I wanted guys who've largely gone through a big chunk of that contract. And you can find. For one thing that's interesting is. I just rolled off 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, like 16 guys who'd had those 6-year deals. One thing interesting, Brandon Phillips is at the very top end of age-wise. I didn't get Kevin Brown's contract in there a little before that.
He was 34.
He was, and
yeah.
That Scott Boras could say all he wanted about how he's a different 34 than most 34. Pretty much, no, it turned out like you thought it would, which is, huh. Those guys aren't usually as good at 40 when they, you know, as they were at 34. But
yeah. The
interesting is that only of those 16 contracts I pulled up, only two guys signed where their first season was a year where they were 30 or older. Jim Thome, who to me, if you're going to talk about a 6-year deal to a 30-plus-year-old guy, you want the Jim Thome production. Jim
right.
Thome was Jim Thome for the life of that contract. He had one bad year, which was injury induced.
I'm going to give Kevin Brown this real quick. You know, in year 5 of that deal, as a 38-year-old, he had a 2.39 ERA and a 1.69 ERA plus in 211 innings. It wasn't until he got traded to the Yankees that he really fell apart. But the Dodgers, the first 5 years of that, 3 of those 5 years, he was quite good. He won an ERA championship. I'm just saying.
No, I'm saying.
I know I sound like I work for the Boras Corporation. I don't. But I was surprised to see that because you said it. I wanted to look him up.
Right, and I'm saying I'm not saying he was, but
Big Jim is one of the best, and also the thing is that Big Jim still was a productive player even after this contract.
Right. He signed another contract after that.
Hey, I can't believe you put Barry Zito on this. He just threw a complete game shutout yesterday.
Yeah.
Come
Barry
on, JJ.
Zito, hey, I, this is not a list of. This is not a good or bad. This is a. I'm putting him down, and then I'm seeing.
Yes.
And
Johan Santana, not so much. Not working out.
You know, but the thing about this is, like, even with Johan Santana, again, it does come down to what do you expect out of this, because in some ways you could argue, yes, Johan Santana got hurt, and you could argue because of that, but he did give him three. It's a 6-year deal where he gave him 3 good years. And he said one basically lost year.
Yeah.
And one, you know, so you don't know. It's like, okay, so what do you judge as successful out of that? The thing that jumps out is that you're
do you
almost.
Have Pedro on there?
No, he was a little before the.
Okay.
But Barry Zito, okay, that's about as bad as it can get. Grady Sizemore is an example to me of the good and the bad of it. Grady Sizemore, until he got hurt, was doing everything you could hope for. He was one of those guys. He signed, he locked him up to age 23.
Face of the franchise kind of player.
Face of the franchise player kind of player. But then, this is to me the concern you have. You've got a guy like Votto. Todd Helton was a great example of this.
Yeah.
Say you have that kind of face of the franchise guy. But if an injury comes up, you're still putting him out there for 550 at-bats. It does not matter whether he's productive or not.
Correct.
You're not saying, well, we're going to sit him now. He's
Todd Helton, basically, his career is a longer version of Don Mattingly's career. A peak that was just ridiculous, whether it was Coors Field or not, an ungodly peak, and then severe back injuries and diminished production, and you keep running him out there. And they really
another example, very similar example, Eric Chavez.
Yeah.
Eric Chavez, the A's had the misfortune of signing Eric Chavez to a six-year extension just at the point when the back injuries really hit.
Right.
And he was still an average player for a couple more years, and then the injuries really took hold.
Right.
Rocco Baldelli
yeah.
signed a six-year extension, and basically at the point where it became clear that, you know, there was the multitude of injuries and there was the illness and all that. They never really got a productive year. That contract ended up being cut short, but they never got a productive year out of that extension. You obviously don't know that's going to happen when you do that, but you know, Alexis Rios, Kurt Vernon Wells are kind of almost the poster children for the dangers of these long-term extensions. Because,
because
like Vernon Wells' case, you know, you're looking at right now, it's like he had two good years, he's had two bad years, and oh yeah, by the way, there's still two more years to go.
How about the fact that Todd Helton's deal was so bad that the last 2 years where he was owed $42 million with a $4.6 million buyout in that for the last year, they reworked that contract. And he's got $13 million deferred from 2014 to 2023 at 3% interest. That's a contract that he's gonna be getting paid at the end of Joey Votto's career. He will still be getting paid.
And the point I'm making on this is that generally, when you hear these long-term deals, be afraid, just because. but again, the debate I wanted to get into this is that because we were talking about this before the podcast began. But let's say that the Reds, I can see the argument the other way too, though. If the Reds, let's say, win a World Series in 2013, let's just say, just for the sake of argument, and then they are
12.
Let's just say 13 for now. Right. Just, you know, like the contract extensions have really kicked in and all.
Yep.
2013 or 14, they win a World Series, and then
assume there's some revenue growth there.
And let's just say, though, you know what? But let's say that after that, okay, 2017, 18, 19, they're one of the worst teams in baseball, or they have a stretch where they're really bad because of this. I don't even know. Like, again, if you're a Reds fan, does that run of relevance? Because let's be honest here, the Reds haven't been relevant.
Yeah, since 1990, they've rarely been relevant.
So,
I mean, they've been irrelevant more than they've been relevant since 1990.
So if that's the case, would you take that trade? I mean, it's a different version of the whole Marlins fan argument.
Right.
You know, do you take a World Series? But it's a little different because, to me, I can see the argument more of a team like the Reds. If you keep your guys, and then so you win a World Series with them, and then they start getting older, and they're still there. You're still saying, that, you know, I remember, you know, Brandon Phillips, World Series hero. Oh, yeah, he's hitting 250 now, but I still remember Brandon's, you know, is that, or like with the Reds, like, okay, I still remember Ken Griffey's not what he was, but I'm still seeing him. Is that a better trade than being a consistently good team that doesn't win one over the next 10 years?
I think it is. If you're a Reds fan, I think you want that trade off of that championship. I mean, I think
I can see the argument for that.
That's what, you know, in sports. You just remember those kind of moments. You remember moments and championship moments. And
you don't remember as much. Hey, we won 90 games 3 years in a row.
Yeah, I mean, that's just not...
Ask a Braves fan.
Everyone aspires for that. Everyone aspires for both. You know, the ideal is both. If you had to pick one, I think you'd pick the championship. I think you'd pick the up and down.
Because clearly, I would say that you could make the argument that the Rays are, as much as they can, trying to do the... They're hoping that they get the championship.
Right.
But they're doing the other approach, which is... What's notable about the Rays at this point is that here is this small market team that is consistently competitive.
Yes, that is the most impressive thing about them, and they really haven't.
And they're not doing anything.
They haven't done a crazy contract.
They're not doing anything to say, okay, this may hurt us long term, but it's going to up our chances to win it this year. I can't think of a thing they've really done. Everything that they do, because there are multiple things they could do. If you wanted to say, hey, we're going to push our hope is that if we win a title here, it's going to change the dynamic of the fans in the area and all that.
If they did that,
at the trade deadline last year, if they just said, you know what, Matt Moore is available, they could have gotten pretty much anything they wanted. But or go a different way. Wade Davis is available.
Right.
We'll bring Matt Moore up. They could have gotten almost anything. You know, that would have been one of the biggest.
They would have gotten a lot. That's for sure.
And I don't see them doing that. That's the other approach. I'm not saying that the Reds are doing a go-for-broke, got-to-win-it this year approach, but it's very much a, we'll worry, let's be honest, Walt Jockey, chances that Walt Jockey's their GM in 2017?
Pretty small.
Pretty small.
I do think that's the thing that really surprised me, that they jumped, not that they signed Votto for so long, I don't think that's great. I just thought it was surprising they did it 2 years before he was a free agent. And that it was for that long.
But I will say I think the teams are looking at this a little bit, what you were just talking about, though. There is some argument can be made that locking up guys now, if the contracts are going to go crazy, like if the revenues are going to continue to grow, you may lock them up now, and it may be that 2 years from now you look at it and it's like, okay, that would have been an eight-year $300 million.
Now, there is that. It's a Baseball America podcast with John and JJ. We should wrap up soon. Take a couple of Twitter questions as quickly as we can, JJ. How young is Jorge Bonifacio to his league right now? Tony in Albuquerque wants to know.
Great question. That's one of the things I'm going to have tomorrow. I'm going to be playing with the NaviCat, our database software. He's young for the league. And a very impressive start, by the way. Walked three times last night. More than anything else, almost. Six walks, two Ks right now. That's for a guy. Small sample size, but for his age. He's an advanced player for his age.
Not as hacktastic as.
But I will plan on. I hope this is. I'm recording this. We're recording this on a Tuesday. Hopefully, at least by Thursday afternoon, I'll have up the youngest 10 players in each league.
That's a cool query. Let's see. Joe LeCates asked many questions. I want to know where will Bubba Starling begin the season? Burlington or Kane County? Obviously, he's
not
going to
be Burlington.
Spring.
I don't think. It's going to be Idaho Falls or King County.
So he'll either be a Chucker or a Cougar?
Right, and I do think it's going to be a Cougar. I think it's going to be I would expect, we had a story up on the site a couple of weeks ago talking to the Royals about this, and they said at the time they had not made the decision that Bubba Starling was going to start the year in extended, but you kind of get the sense that maybe they were leaning that way. And the way they put it is they said, J.J. Piccolo, who essentially is their VP, he's in charge of their scouting and their player development. The way he put it was, last year, Chester Cuthbert, some of those guys, we knew. May 15th, Chester Cuthbert is going to be in Kane County. He's not going to start the season there. We're going to let it warm up and all, let him have a little time. We're working on him with the extended spring. But then that's where he's going to go. Bubba Starling, there's no such decision has been made. Bubba Starling, they're tweaking a couple of things with his approach, with the swing and all.
Right.
And when they say, they basically the way he put it is, we'll know. There'll be a week. There'll be a week that he's playing extended, and they'll either go, okay, we got to get him out of here. Or you'll turn around in June, that week hasn't happened. And if that happens, then you're going to send him on to Idaho Falls. The reason I say Idaho Falls, no one told me that, but that's their highest level short season team. He's going to the highest level short season team if he doesn't go to low A.
We would love him to come to
I would love to have. There's going to be some. I'm pretty confident this year it's going to be the most interesting Burlington club that we've seen, because for one thing, they've got three shortstops, interesting shortstops, who are going to be in rookie ball or short season ball. So we're going to have one of those here.
Didn't know we were going to have an Appy League preview here on the show, but why not? Woe Doctor asks, is Adis Portillo destined for the bullpen? It's always easy to say that.
Yeah,
any pitcher who's that young, I think that's an easy default. I would just let the guy pitch a little bit before we worry about Adis Portillo's future.
Right, I was going to say, and the other thing with that is so hard to predict is that's not always determined by the player even.
Right.
We've seen multiple examples of that in the big leagues right now. Could Aaron Crow start? Potentially, but as soon as Joaquin Soria went down, they're like, nope, we need you in the pen. Naftali Feliz getting the chance finally to start, but with him, it was like last year, could he have started? Well, maybe, but we don't know. But it's not the point I'm making is that a lot of the times those decisions were made not because the guy can't do it, but because we think you can help us now here, and then there's inertia becomes powerful. Well, he's doing really well in this role. Do we want to step back? Aroldis Chapman had a great spring.
Right.
And they're still not saying that he won't start for them some point this year. But
he won't start for them this year.
But the thing about it is that, yeah, it's like as soon as spring training ended, well, we've got five other starters.
Right.
Including, speaking of, we never talk about the extensions, including Bronson Arroyo's long-term, untradeable extension.
That's an untradeable extension.
But, because of that, okay, he goes back to the bullpen. That's not because Aroldis Chapman can't necessarily start. It's because that's what the team has determined that he can do.
The other part of that is that that's assuming Adis Portier gets to the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that's a pretty big assumption, considering what he did in the Midwest League last year.
Long ways away.
He's a long ways away, repeating the level. Yeah, we'll see. We had a couple questions also about the draft. I'm going to hold those off till next podcast. One of them does talk about top college sophomores we've seen this year. I will say this. This year, just glancing at last year's sophomore, what we had coming into the year, our top sophomores, Carson Whitson, hurt. Ryan Stanek has had a pretty decent year. Colin Moran, hurt, but it's a short-term injury. Dylan Covey, just not the same guy he was in high school. Ryan Eads at LSU, definite name to remember. Austin Kubica of Rice, though, has been hurt, not been very good this year. Michael Lorenzen at Cal State Fullerton, still top 10 guy. Chris Bryant, San Diego. Adam Plutko, UCLA. Out of those guys, the one that I've seen has been Colin Moran. Colin Moran was awfully good. I have seen Michael Lorenzen on TV one time as well. I saw him last summer for Team USA. He's very interesting. He's almost more of a prospect on the mound in some ways because he's like 95 as a relief pitcher at Fullerton. But that sophomore class has had some attrition already, a fair amount of attrition.
That's been a story of this year.
Yeah, this hasn't been a great spring on the amateur side. Bobby Wall is a guy who was 24 at Ole Miss who will be a lot higher on this list. If we were to redo this list, he'd be in the top 10. That's a good name to think of for next year's draft, the ace at Ole Miss. You got any other Twitter questions you want to get to, JJ?
I think that's, let's see.
I think so. It's a pretty good rambling podcast with righteous indignation on my part about Dylan Bundy and the Orioles development. But that's what you come to the Baseball America podcast for, isn't it?
Come for the info, stay for the righteous indignation.
That's right. We'll see you next time with more righteous indignation and more baseball information. For JJ, I'm John. Thanks, everybody.